Yes, 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 and we're back. Welcome to the Grapevine. We're going to pick some more grapes. Walgreens on 27th and North Avenue is shutting down. They said they had 120 calls from the police, and they also had 33 shootings, I guess. And I'm concerned. The Walgreens is just not closing, but it's another link that's been breaking for years. But here's the part that almost nobody is talking about. Nobody is talking about this. But before we talk about the part that no one is talking about, we're going to, Zach, you got the clip pulled up. Let's watch this real quick. You guys need to see this.
To close tomorrow. It'll be the eighth Walgreens store to close in Milwaukee in 3 years. A log of Milwaukee police calls for service shows officers were responding to the 27th and North location 122 times last year, including for shots fired and 33 cases of theft and robbery. Walgreens plans to transfer prescriptions to its next closest store. That would be 35th in Wisconsin, which is 2 miles away. The Walgreens on 27th and North is set to close tomorrow.
So we're talking about whether Milwaukee is becoming a city where your zip code determines your life expectancy, right? One by one, grocery stores disappear, pharmacies disappear, investment disappears. Matter of fact, there's more in this category is more disinvestment than it is investment into our community. Now, I even heard that they're about to build a signature towers downtown Milwaukee, let alone we got disinvestment from a large scale athlete that just left. But the people, we're expected to stay and somehow survive and thrive. But here's my question. At what point does market forces become community abandonment? At what point does the market determine whether or not a community will become abandoned? This has been going on for a really, really long period of time. I remember in history, especially this has happened in history class, where as a community, during redlining, even before redlining, when people patronize certain stores and certain businesses, when white people didn't want black people to come to their stores and we started encroaching on these certain communities, what did those stores and those owners do? They left. They left the community and there was a void, whereas we had to pick up and put our own mechanisms, our own stores, our own ideas into the places of those particular stores. In some ways, some of those businesses thrived, but in a lot of ways, those businesses didn't thrive. But here's the point that people aren't talking about. Let me talk about Walgreens. Walgreens has lease agreements. This is to you, Walgreens. Walgreens has lease agreements on some of the former Milwaukee Walgreens locations. You guys know this. That can prevent another pharmacy from opening in those same buildings, even after Walgreens leaves. So that means that a dark building can stay dark while the community loses access to prescription and basic health care. You guys get this, right? A building can stay dark. It can have all that refrigeration, all the mechanics, the HVAC system can stick. The refrigeration in terms of where the food can be housed can stay. The pharmacy area is operational. The electrical insides, the innards of the building can stay. But what cannot operate there is another pharmacy. Basic community prescriptions and basic community health care. People who have many different ailments have to travel now rather than go to the 27th and North Avenue Walgreens. Guess where they have to go? The next Walgreens is about 2 miles away, I think on 35th and Wisconsin. So rather than going to a neighborhood pharmacy where I need my medication for whatever it is, I now have to go to 35th and Wisconsin to pick up my medication. Or I have to go to the pharmacy that's going to be built in October by, I think, I forgot the company's name, on 35th and Lisbon. But still, it's still a large void. And why the continuance of competition by a company that does not have any interest in its community, in the community that is just planted? You don't see a Walgreens. When Walgreens comes into a community, you don't see, and this is my other pet peeve, and this is a big pet peeve, especially for people that are opening up businesses. If you are opening up a business, don't just open up a business and not do anything with the community. Before you, it should be a law or an ordinance or a policy, whatever it is, it should be a policy or law or ordinance for a business to do community work prior to them opening up in the business. If they're in the business of doing business in the community, why not require the city of Milwaukee, to you guys, why not require for those businesses to do something in that particular neighborhood, however large that neighborhood is? Why not do something in that community? Why not? Why is it that when a business opens up, they just open up? They just open the business, and then when they open their doors, they're expecting people to come into those doors and patronize them. This is a far cry from basic community business. This is a far cry from basic community business. When I opened up the Juice Kitchen, it took about 8 months or more of community work to get recognized by the community and then open up those doors. And the community paid me back. They paid me back by having a line out the wazoo when we first opened those doors up in, I think it was October, 15 or close to 15 years ago. This is a Walgreens, you should be ashamed of yourself. You guys don't even know the half. Here's the other half. When Walgreens closed down, and in the lease agreement, I think it's a policy of theirs that a pharmacy cannot operate in that space for, at the very least, I think it's like 50 years or something crazy. This is out of order. This is not just we've coined this phrase, a food desert. We're not living in a food desert. A food desert means that there is no food. We're living in a systemic food apartheid, where there is food, but there is not the proper food. We're living in a place where if we want good food, we have to travel past the food that is inside of our community. So if I live in 53205, 53206, guess what? I'm going past 53205, past 53206 to get to a, if I go want to go to a restaurant, to get to a restaurant that serves me, you know, some healthy meal. I got to go out to 18224285328532285322453218. I have to go out to those places in order to get a healthy meal, in order to shop for my family that needs fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. There's probably only one, maybe two grocery stores. If you guys know any, please call 833-212-1017. There's probably one or two good grocery stores that we can get in the neighborhood, in an inner city, that we can get good fresh vegetables and fruit from. And if y'all know any more, I'm pretty sure there's some outside of our farmers that are farming. I'm pretty sure there's probably one that I'm missing. But right now, it's not just a food desert. It's food apartheid. And this is becoming an atrocity. I wish I knew the number of grocery stores that closed down, because we need people to step up and not criticize, but to do something. When we come back, we're gonna come back with callers. Yes, caller. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? This is caller.
What's up? How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well. One solution that I saw as a mail carrier,
yeah,
is that specifically people who get regular prescriptions,
yep,
can get those delivered to their homes by the post office. So,
explain how that works.
Okay. Well, just like any other thing that you get through the mail,
yeah,
like you have packages delivered,
yeah,
there are a lot of health providers that encourage that you get, if you have diabetic medicine or high blood pressure medicine, that you get that medication through the mail, because they, you know, can make sure that you have it in advance before you run out.
Okay.
Which cuts Walgreens out. I've always, for quite some time, thought that Walgreens was an overpriced entity.
Yeah.
Walgreens has been around since 1901. So what you did with the juice company, maybe they did that in 1898. They started up on Cottage Grove in Chicago. I don't know.
Yep.
But at this point, they are a national chain. And in a capitalistic society, businesses are not in business to benefit anybody but them,
yeah,
and their family, just like NBA players who are business,
yeah,
people. Once you become a $100 million entity and you have employees of your own, you have to make business decisions for you and yours, which would be your family, your employees, and those in your circle.
Right.
And I can't fault anyone for doing that, but it is my choice to patronize a place where I feel is overpriced.
Yeah.
Because some of the same items that you get at Walgreens, for example, you can get at Dollar Tree,
mm-hmm,
for a dollar and a quarter, where they're charging $10 for it. So
yeah.
I haven't shopped at a Walgreens. I can't remember when.
But was
so choices.
Yeah. Go ahead.
For people that are more, there's in Milwaukee, there is no place that you can't get to on the bus within 30 minutes.
Right.
On North Avenue, there is fresh fruit and vegetables, if people choose to eat them, right down on East North Avenue at that Pick and Save.
Right.
And there are three others that are probably in walking distance from there. And, you know, if you're physically able, riding a bike would probably increase your health by riding over to the one on Van Buren for the things that they might not have. So
yeah.
When we say a desert in a city as small as Milwaukee, I think we're placing limits that our ancestors would have, who walked to work in Montgomery for a year, would be ashamed of. And so to the point of shame, if you're in a community as a business person and your windows are getting broken and your employees are getting stuck up at one location, and it's specifically at that location, but you see fit to keep one open less than 3 miles away, that tells you something about the activity that's going on in that community.
Yeah. And it also tells you that you need to step up as a business owner and do something about it, because the people that are in the community are the ones that are usually going to patronize the business. Al, what's going on?
Oh, everything is going fine. If you want fresh juice or fresh vegetables, why don't you go to your local local fruit markets? It's always been about the zip code when it comes to your quality of fruits.
Right.
And if you're going to a grocery store and the level of respect and presentation is real low, why even go there?
Mm-hmm.
You could grow your own fruits.
Yeah.
You know how to go everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Go to these fruit markets and buy your fruits. Just because you're in the inner city, y'all, you don't have to go in the inner city. I don't know why they keep putting this on you. If the meat is bad, if the fruit is spoiled, why the hell would you go there? Y'all got to hit the reset button, okay? I know they never tell y'all that. Hit the reset button. You don't have to go there if they don't take care of the meat. Go to your local fruit market. Go to the vegetable market. And if you go, don't act a fool. Act like you got some class and respect and buy your fruit in peace.
So here's what I'm thinking, Al, is...
What's up?
What we're addressing is, and you already know, you hit on it, what we're addressing is not just a food desert, but it's a food apartheid. It's when there's a systematic disinvestment from entities, large, medium, and or small, that who have invested a large sum and or small sum of information and resources into a community, and have definitely, you know, they contributed whatever they need to contribute. They pulled that money, they pulled those resources, they pulled that food and that information out of that community to save and conserve. And so now you, your grandmother, who is probably in a wheelchair, has to go, and I'm not saying yours, but I'm just saying it's just an example.
I was going to say, why she got to be in a wheelchair?
That's a wheelchair, man. Like...
Well, I hear what you're saying.
Now we got to go. Now, I'm just saying we got to go further. We got to travel further to get to that farmer's market, and or, you know, what would you say to that?
Well, if you got to travel further, you need to ask these people you voted that lives that overlook your community. Why did the Common Council allow them to put that vape shop, that gas station, them liquor stores that's every three blocks? And they come in the same community where you live and put up a banner of saying, vote for me, when they see all that devastation. And that's why them same people you voted for, who have them slumlords, who got these little corner stores, who never comes out, but when it comes to the woods, they all up in their booty hole. Them the people you need to talk about. And also, the people who live in the neighborhood need to get some pride, and they need to give the redneck mentality back to England that they adopted. That's what they need to do. Change your mindset, and then you can control what goes on in your neighborhood. And maybe some of them black folks you voted for, maybe stop voting for them. How about that?
So who
have a good day.
You have a good day too, Al. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Al made a good point. Al made a really, really good point. I think the point is, if we're looking towards our politicians when a business is opening up, what type of information is privy to our politicians when a business opens up. And I know that I, when opening up, though, my businesses had to at least talk to one, two, maybe even three politicians to make sure that, you know, things were on the up and up. But also, you also had to pay those fees. You had to pay the food license fees. You had to pay the business registration. You had to pay, like, just certain things, you know, to the city and or to the state to make sure that you're a legal, viable business. But my question is the same as yours, Al. We have a multitude of liquor stores and churches and stuff that all I seen two liquor stores owned by two different people sitting next to each other. They're next to each other, and a corner store was at the end of the block, and they're selling the same exact thing, the same exact thing. I don't even know if these people are from the same family, but if they could be, because they're selling the same exact thing, they're cousins probably. What are we doing? This is not accidental. When we talk about a food desert doesn't mean, hey, this is an accident. Food desert actually means that. It makes people think healthy food doesn't exist. And healthy food does exist. Healthy food exists tremendously. It's there. But what we're talking about is the systematic destruction of our neighborhoods by special interests, private equity, and individuals who don't have your family at heart. They do not have your family in mind at all. Because for example, if Walgreens had your family in mind, they'd cut their lease and allow for someone else to open up a pharmacy right in their neighborhood. They cut their lease and allow for someone to be like, hey, you know what? Matter of fact, I'm not only going to put a pharmacy here, but I'm going to put a five to six, seven, eight, ten story building right on top of this thing. I'm going to redevelop this whole entire swath of land. But they would rather let this thing sit still and do nothing. So we're walking around, our kids walking around, we walking past all of this garbage, and we gotta go far out to shop. That don't make any sense. That does not make any sense. It doesn't make sense. Also, you even talking about labor. So we have all these labor shortages, we're allowing these companies to get away with, it's almost capital murder. Food apartheid, that's what it is. The problem is created. Food apartheid was coined by a lady by the name, I think her name is Karen Washington or something like that. She's from out of the East Coast. She says the problem was created for food apartheid due to redlining. That's when they drew a red line around your neighborhood and they wouldn't let black people move out of those neighborhoods. And then and if you wanted to move out of those neighborhoods, they wouldn't give you insurance. They wouldn't cut you housing insurance. So it was hard to purchase a neighborhood. And if you did move out and you didn't have insurance, sometimes people will burn down your house. Malcolm X. Corporate disinvestment. Grocery stores leaving. This is what food apartheid is. Grocery stores, like, if you ever worked in a grocery store, you recognize and you already know that these companies have insurance. These companies, Walgreens has insurance. Like the gentleman said, it was started in 1901 off of Cottage Grove in Chicago. Walgreens single-handedly pushed up the price of pharmaceutical drugs. Pharmaceutical drugs. Food apartheid, y'all. If you got any questions, comments, and or concerns, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Call in. Let us know what you think about food apartheid. What are your thoughts about the disinvestment, the systematic disinvestment, and what can Milwaukee do? Is Milwaukee doing enough? Holla at me. Yes. Play that, Zach. Got it. Yes. All right. We're back. We're back. We're back. We're about to pick some more grapes off the grapevine. I'm about to play a video by Dr. Claude Anderson. If you don't know who Dr. Claude Anderson is, he's a great black social scientist and also business guru that has created the many, many books based around black economics. And I want to share something with y'all that I'm hopeful for, but no, might not happen ever again. But go ahead, play that, Zach.
In 44, in a black city, blacks own 2 gas stations out of 146. You own nothing. The rest, the hotels and the 7-Elevens, are owned by Indians. Asians are owning the laundries. They're owning the hair and wig shops, the nail shops. Blacks own nothing in a 90% black city. And that's why now Detroit went into poverty. That's why it was declared bankrupt. Because blacks had money. Blacks had about 11 or 12 billion dollar a year annual disposable amount of money passing through their hands. They were going out to the suburbs, spending it in the suburbs, and spending it with the Arabs and the Asians, the Hispanics, and everybody else. And when I tried to put in a plan there for black folk, they said it was racist for me to try to help black folk. They said, yes, Dr. Anderson, we admit in this town that we have an Asian town, a Chinatown, a Pole town, a hockey town, a Cork town, a Mexican town, and a Greek town, but it's racist for you to try to do something for black folk, to build a black town. We got 146 gas stations in Detroit, Michigan.
Thanks. Thanks, Zach. Think about it. For those of you who've been all over the world, even in Beijing, they have a African area. There's an area in Beijing, China, where you can find nothing but Africans speaking their different dialects from the different countries from Africa in Beijing. In Europe, same exact thing. Because they got a place called Brixton in London. Brixton, like Brooklyn, but that's where all the black people hang out. And it's well known. Super well known, and they even have their own currency. It's a Brixton coin. They have their own currency where you can go shop at some of the stores, or at least they did. But when we get to America, when we want our own thing, like Black Wall Street, it gets burned down. Like any other. Bronzeville, done. Any other black area, done. We can't name it African American area. We have to be inclusive. But everybody else doesn't have to be inclusive. They can have Chinatown. They can have Little Canada. They can have they even got like Little French. they have French Lick. They have all kinds of places for everybody else, but we can't have it for ourselves. So then when we do want something for ourselves in our own neighborhoods, where majority of us is 90%, you know, African American, black, whatever, in our neighborhoods, and we have these businesses, there's some different disinvestment. There's not just some disinvestment. There's a lot of disinvestment. Grocery stores are pulling out. I want to know what are we going to do? I looked up today the term food apartheid, and I saw, and I was brought to the attention of not just food apartheid, the word, but food apartheid by the book. This is in our policy, in City of Milwaukee policy. The Common Council officially declared that food apartheid, the systemic disruption of food, is a public health emergency. So if you're walking around, you can't find a grocery store. If you're walking around, you can't find a pharmacy. If you walk around, your kid is going to the grocery store, grabbing some Flamin' Hots, and their first meal of the day is a snack. If you're walking around, this is not, it's not by accident. This is, it's real life, a public health emergency. When was it was passed? It was created January of 2026. It was, the final adoption was April 21st of 2026. It was signed by the mayor of April 22nd, 2026, by our mayor, Chevy Johnson. He's going to be on soon. It was passed. It was a resolution. The resolution is titled, it's a resolution declaring food apartheid a public health emergency and directing coordinated city action. It's supposed to be coordinated city action. That means that the city is going to fight against the people that are taking away from our city. So they take up space and they move their money elsewhere. And where do they move their money to? We talked about it the last hour. They're moving their money out to the burbs. They're moving their money. Trust me, if you go out to the suburbs, there's more grocery stores being built. There's more Starbucks being built. There's more Pick and Saves or whatever else, Kroger, Publix, Myers being built. There are more grocery stores being built. And there's a lot, when you walk into some of those grocery stores, they're not as busy as some of the grocery stores that we had in our neighborhoods. I think the number is at 8. This is an atrocity that I want to hear from people what should go in those stores. What should go in those places of the stores? Because things can happen. You can kind of force it, and it's going to be a fight by the community. It's going to be a fight by the city. It's going to be a fight by the state. But things can happen. But what should go in the middle of those stores? What should go in the middle of those areas? What should happen? I'm asking what can happen. Y'all tell me. Is it another grocery store? Is it another pharmacy? Is it another group homes? What is it? What should go in those areas? Because at this point, this is a public health issue, and we're getting hammered. We're getting hammered. In this resolution, the city departments are to work on the solutions, which may include attracting other grocery stores. And it's so many people with great ideas out here. It's so many people with great ideas to put in those places. It's a lot. A part of the solution, supporting neighborhood-owned food businesses. Should we put more food businesses in those places? Expanding farmers markets and mobile markets. Improving transportation to the grocery stores. Is that really a solution? And coordinating with public health agencies and community organizations. So why is it significant now? It's significant because there's several major grocery store and pharmacy closures that are coming up. They're still coming. and we're not ready for it. And people are feeling the brunt. And this is becoming a really, really detrimental issue in our community, y'all. When we come back, we're going to ask some real pertinent questions, and we're going to search for those answers. Yes, yes, yes. Welcome back to the Grapevine. Welcome back to the Grapevine. We're going to pick some more grapes. I'm your host, Manan Sabir, and this is 101.7 The Truth Radio. We are counting down. We got Jazz and Meech coming up next. If you guys want to know, something strange, and hear me out. Most people think healthcare begins when you're sick. And I don't. Healthcare does not begin when you're sick. Healthcare begins long before the disease ever shows up. But before we get into that, make sure you give us a call, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017, 833-212-1017. Healthcare begins long before a disease ever shows up. It begins with breakfast. It begins with stress. It begins with sleep. It begins with whether your neighbor is safe enough to walk. It begins with whether you have clean water, whether your kids have parks, whether your family can afford fresh vegetables, whether your community has hope. Doctors treat disease. Communities prevent the disease, y'all. Straight up, like, this is a huge, huge, important part of our life. Like, I talk about everything on this show. And what I do recognize is that healthcare begins at home. Healthcare begins, it's not just about expensive technology, but the list is very basic. Healthcare begins when you are walking. Just get up and start walking. And I've preached this before. Get up and walk a block, two blocks, three blocks, four blocks if you got the gumption. And to start sleeping better, get some better rest, get some good rest. Start drinking great, some water, alkaline water. Get some sunlight. Make sure you pray. Make sure you have gratitude. Explore healthy relationships. And start moving. Go to the gym. Have a friend. Get a friend. Go to the gym. Find some fresh food. And this is what we're talking about. Rather than searching out the corner store, if we have to, and if we really, really have to, please find a friend. Walk to the fresh market. Wherever the fresh market is in your neighborhood, your zip code, walk to that fresh market. Go and get on the bus, hit that Uber, hit that cab, and go grab some healthy food. This is what I've dedicated my entire life to, through martial arts, through wellness, nutrition. Somebody asked me today, what was the best juice I can juice for my diabetes? And I told them the best juice you can juice for your diabetes is a beet juice. Just hit up a grocery store, grab some beets, and boom, push those beets through your juicer. Even if you got a if you gotta soften them up, push them through your blender and blend them up, make you a smoothie, and drink that juice. What's the best juice for my blood pressure? Again, beets. Matter of fact, this is a great one. Beets, and I'm gonna give you guys a hint. Beets, sweet potatoes. If you got a juicer, beets, sweet potatoes, apples, lemon, lime, pineapple. If you want a really, really good juice, juice a gang load of beets, apples, pineapple, lemon, lime, and sweet potatoes. And if you want to sweeten it up, if you want to really sweeten it up, put some strawberries in there. And make it as sweet as you possibly can. Make it as sweet as you possibly can, y'all. This is real life. But we don't need any more food apartheid in our community at all. Most of us grew up hearing the term food desert. Remember, this is not, and this is as my in my closing statements, this is not we don't have food deserts anymore. We have food apartheid, which is a systemic disinvestment from out of our community. So think about a desert, how natural a desert is. Nobody created the Sahara Desert. Nobody voted for it. Nobody invested in it. Nobody redlined it. It just simply exists. But apartheid is different. It's man-made. So it's the result of investment decisions, discrimination, and systems that decide who gets resources and who doesn't. Milwaukee, we intentionally chose that word because they're saying this isn't an accident. This is not an accident. This is something we built that has been built over generations. It looks like this is what food apartheid looks like in our community. It looks like children growing up without fresh fruit. Rather than fresh fruit, they're looking at the cereal box. They're digging their hands in the cereal box. It looks like seniors, your grandmother, your granddaddy, your great-grandaunt, your grand-aunt. It looks like them taking a couple buses asking you to give them a ride to get some vegetables. It looks like neighborhoods with 6 liquor stores, but not one full-service grocery store. There is a full-service grocery store. As a matter of fact, I had to think about it. It's a full-service grocery store on Fond du Lac, where the old G's used to be, on Fond du Lac and I think Sherman and Fond du Lac. There's a grocery store over there. Go support that. It looks like people having no choice but to buy what's available instead of what's healthy. Because what's available is easy. It's a way for individuals to pacify their and satiate themselves so they can feel full enough to make it through the day. So they can go to work the next day or handle their kids or go to the sporting event. But it's a way to satiate themselves, but people don't realize those are empty calories. Those are empty calories. Those are calories that you can't, it says zero sum. There's zero sum calories. And this is where this becomes my conversation, because I'm not just talking about grocery stores. I'm not just talking about our bodies. Poor nutrition increases the health, the risk of diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, stroke, high blood pressure, depression, even dementia. Even dementia. Dementia is real. So when people ask me why we talk about wellness every day on this show, this is my why. This is my why. I want to hear from you. What is missing in your neighborhood? What is missing in our neighborhoods? A grocery store, a pharmacy, a farmer's market, or is it simply just simply healthy, affordable food? I want to hear from y'all for the, over the next couple of days. I want to hear what it seems like it could be. I'm excited for the future, but I'm also worried that we are going to allow for the systemic disinvestment in our community to penetrate so far into our lives, into our communities, that we're not going to be able to get anything back. It's going to be empty. And then when it's empty, people who have the money are going to come and take over that particular period of land. I'm excited for us in some ways, but also a little sad. Hey, y'all, I'm Anand Sabir. This is The Grapevine. You're on the Truth Radio 101.7. Let's continue this conversation. Holla at y'all in a minute.